Welcome, it's Tuned to Yesterday, featuring broadcasts from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's horror in this hour. Later on, Murder at Midnight from 1946. But first, a broadcast of Inner Sanctum called Death Demon from July 5th, 1948 on CBS.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries, brought to you by Bromo Seltzer.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, inviting you through the gory portals of the squeaking door for another soiree with some super-duper supernatural personality. And if you've never met a super-duper supernatural personality, aren't you the lucky one? Because they're devitalized people, usually somewhat dead, with transparent complexions and morbid imaginations. Would you like to become one? You won't have to worry about the high cost of living. And you'll never have to worry about dying, because once you're dead, that little matter will take care of itself. But, why don't I become one? I've got news for you. I am. All right, friend. Let's stop all this ghoulishness and let's get grim. Now, remember our rule. Don't jump out of the window unless it's open. Ready now. Then listen as Howard Rhine tells us his strange story.
The wind was rising when I returned to Greystone Farms late that night. The house with its Victorian gables and towers looked like a clawing hand reaching into the scudding clouds. I went directly to my room, even though the living room was lit up. I had no desire to see my stepmother or the man she had married. The moment I got into my room and turned on the light, I gasped. My things had been disturbed. Many of them were gone. I ran down to the living room.
Come in, Howard. We want to talk to you.
I looked at this young woman, not more than 10 years older than myself, whom I called Mother. In the flickering firelight, she looked more beautiful than ever. But he was there, too. And I felt his voice cut across the room.
You needn't stare at her like that, Howard. She didn't take those things out of your room.
Who did, sir?
I did. Please stop this absurd trick of calling me sir. Do you like it or not, I'm your stepfather.
I'm sorry, sir, but my manner of addressing you is the politest I could think of.
Please, Howard.
Where are the things you took out of my room, sir?
Here.
You had no right to take them.
I told him to.
You?
For your own good, Howard. We were worried about you.
Were you really?
You've been ill. You know what the doctor said. What we found in your room justified all our fears. How long have you been reading these horrid books?
Ever since my father was murdered.
What do you expect to get out of them?
Perhaps, sir, I expected to find some way of reaching my father.
You know that's nonsense.
Is it?
Books on witchcraft, necromancy. Morbid rubbish. I gave you credit for more intelligence, Howard.
This brooding about your father might destroy your mind.
And why should you care about that, Mother?
Because, I'm fond of you, Howard. I'm not your real mother, I know, but I tried to be one to you when your father was alive. I want to help you now.
Help? Then why don't you try to find out who murdered my father 2 years ago?
The police are doing everything they can. Do you think I've stopped trying?
Yes, Mother. I don't believe you even care who murdered your former husband. All you care about is him.
Now, see here, Howard.
It's true. I know it. I'm not a fool. The only reason you permit me to stay in this house is because my father's will compelled you to take care of me, or you wouldn't have a penny of income.
Howard, you're hysterical.
Can't you see what these books have done to you?
Perhaps you'd like to see what they've done for me, sir.
What are you talking about?
This morbid nonsense. What if I tell you that some of those things are true?
They can't be.
Someday I'll be able to talk to my father and find out who murdered him in his sleep. Perhaps I might be able to do it right now.
Right now?
You're frightened? You wouldn't like to see him again. This man you loved so deeply that you remarried a year after his death.
Stop it, Horace! Stop it!
And you're frightened too, aren't you, sir? And with good reason. I don't think you'd care to meet this man whose wife you stole.
Horace!
Would you like to see him?
I'm not afraid.
Then perhaps I shall make him appear.
What are you saying, Howard?
Do you know where I was all day, Mother? At my father's grave. And look, this earth! I've brought some of it back. This earth that's now mingled with his remains. Listen. That's Dane, my father's dog. Animals know when the dead are near. This time it will work, I'm sure. The signs are right.
What are you going to do?
Throw this earth into the fire and follow an ancient ritual to set loose the chained spirits of the dead. There!
Howard!
Did you see how the flames leap up, Mother?
The lightning struck that tree and knocked a branch through the window.
You're wrong. It's my father. Father! Where are you? Father! Didn't believe me, but I knew that at that moment my father came back to this earth. They were terrified, both of them, though they tried not to show it. That night I went to my room, listened to the storm howl itself out, but there was no further sign of my father. I must have slept, perhaps dreamed, because I heard a voice I hadn't heard in 2 years. I recognized it. Still thick with the accent he had acquired from his boyhood in Europe.
My son, wake up and find the person who murdered me. Wake up, my son, wake up!
The next thing I knew, I was rubbing my eyes. My room was full of mist, tinted a strange yellow gold by the murky moonlight that filtered through the windows. My father's dog, Dane, was tugging at my leg. He was trying to lead me out of the room. I followed him through the halls of that huge silent house to my father's study. It had been locked up since he died, and no one ever used it since. But when I tried the handle this night, the door opened, as though being pulled by some unknown force. Mist and moonlight crept into the study, lit the dust and cobwebs and shadowy furnishings with an eerie light. And then something crashed. A broken vase with a tiny key among its fragments lay on the floor. It might have been Dane who knocked over that vase, but I don't think so. I picked up the key. The moment I had it in my hand, I remembered a scene from my childhood. I had secretly observed my father remove a book from one of the cases, take out this tiny key, and open a hidden panel in the bookcase. Like a man in a dream, I repeated the action. I removed the book, and there was the secret panel. I opened it with the key. There was nothing in it but a few large notebooks. I took them out, opened one, and by the flickering yellow light of my match, my father came back to me.
In this journal, I record thoughts that if they remain unexpressed, might drive me mad. I know now that my wife, Gilda, is seeing another man. I know his name. Dale Barton.
want, Mother?
Just to see you. I've been worried about you.
Really? Why?
You've been locked in this room for the last 2 days. Here, I have brought you some food.
Thank you. Where is your husband?
He had to drive to town. Howard, you can't go on like this.
You love him very much, don't you?
I wouldn't have married him if I did.
You love him more than you love my father?
Please, there's no point in discussing this. Your father's dead, and that's all past.
Not quite dead. In fact, he's very close to us at this moment.
Close?
Yes. So close that he can reach out and touch me.
Howard, tickle my head.
Don't believe me, Mother.
This is all nonsense.
Is it? What would you do if I told you that my father is holding your hand this very minute? What would you do if I told you that he has taken possession of my body?
Howard, you're ill. You don't know what you're saying.
Did you know Dale Barton before my father was murdered?
No. I only met him after your father died.
You lie.
That's his voice.
You have been seeing Dale Barton for months. I know. I followed you.
No. No.
I talked to you about it the day before I died. You swore he meant nothing to you.
Let go of me. Let go.
Did you kill me?
No. No.
Answer me. Did you murder me? You once said you hated me.
Let go of me, please.
You said you loved me even on the day I was murdered.
You're hurting me.
Did you murder me? Was it because of him? Tell me.
Help me. He's going to murder me. Help me. Someone.
You crazy fool. What's going on here?
Dale, help me. He wants to kill me.
All right. Let go.
No. She's mine.
No.
Oh. Dale. Oh, Dale.
Come, Gilda. I'll take you out of here.
He led her out of the room while I lay on the floor. Had she murdered my father? Had he? I knew at last I had the means of finding out. There were thick vines outside my window, and late that night, as I had often done when I was a boy, I carefully, quietly climbed down them, stopping at a point outside their window. I clung to the wall like a bat, and I heard them talking.
Did you hear his voice?
You don't actually believe.
I don't know what to believe. He looks so much like his father. When he sees me, spoke to me, it was his father.
Gilda, you're being foolish about this.
Am I? On the day William was murdered, Howard was away at college. How could he have known what we talked about? And he did know. That boy seemed to know every word. That boy of... Or is he his father?
Gilda, do you know what you're saying?
Yes. This isn't an ordinary thing. There's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, yes, there is.
I climbed back to my room to think. I dared not go to sleep because I knew my father had been murdered in his sleep. And if they had murdered him, they'd certainly have an excellent reason to kill me. I thought of running away, but then I would never find out. I know now why I couldn't run away. My father within me was holding me there. I lay down on my bed to rest. And then suddenly, I found myself dreaming that a pair of powerful hands were clutching at my throat. I struggled, gasped for breath, tried to scream. I was being murdered in my sleep just as my father was. I clawed at those iron fingers, clawed at those hands that were cutting off my life. And then I opened my eyes and discovered that it was not a nightmare. I hadn't been dreaming. It was real. I was being murdered.
Well, friends, your breathing spell is over. Now it's time to lose your breath again, so let's get back to our story. Now, what did we do with the call? Oh, yes. We were interrupted while we were making one. And if you remember, the corpse belonged to Howard Ryan, the young man who was telling us this story. He had just discovered that his dream had come true, and someone was choking him to death. That's a nice way to wake up from sleep, isn't it? Well, let's have Howard tell us what happened.
My eyes focused through the haze, and I recognized Dale, my stepfather. They were his hands that were around my neck. Suddenly, I heard Dane bark, and the door flew open, and like a rising cannon shell, the dog flew through the air at the throat of my stepfather. A moment later, I felt his hands release me as he shouted,
"Go more hard! He'll kill me! I'll take
you!" For a moment, I did nothing. I knew I wanted him to die, but I still wasn't sure if he had killed my father. I suppose I was a fool, but I yelled, "Dane, stop it! Down, Dane, down! Here, Dane!
Come here! Who opened the door? I want to get out of here."
"Not yet."
"Why? Are you going to turn that dog loose on me again?"
"Perhaps."
"You want to kill me?"
"You tried to kill me."
"Then you lost your mind completely."
"I woke up with your hands around my throat."
"You're insane. I was trying to pick you up from the floor."
"You're lying."
"I'm not. I heard you moaning and screaming, and I came up to see what was wrong. I found you on the floor. You were having a nightmare."
"Was I?"
"Of course. Why should I want to kill you?"
"Because I may find out how you murdered my father." What he said could have been true. I had had little sleep for a long time, and his attack on me could have been a nightmare. I could never be certain. But to protect myself, I kept a gun with me at all times. I read and reread the journals of my father, which I had found. More and more often, it was his voice that came out of my mouth, his thoughts that filled my mind. And then came the night when I found out the truth.
"Good evening, Howard."
"What are you doing in my room, sir?"
"I came to have a talk with you."
"Dane! Dane!"
"There's no use calling for your dog. You'll never see him again."
"What did you do with him?"
"What should have been done long ago."
"What? What have you got there?"
"A knife. And it's quite sharp. Quite suited to the purpose I intended for."
"You came to kill me. Did my mother put you up to this?"
"No. As a matter of fact, your stepmother is in town right now. We two are quite alone."
"I see."
"You've always hated me, haven't you, Howard?"
"Yes, sir."
"I suppose you can't help it. Your stepmother's a very beautiful woman."
"She has nothing to do with us."
"Makes very little difference. The fact of the matter is that you become dangerously psychopathic. I want you to know that I've taken steps to have you confined."
"Oh, so that's the game, sir. You're going to kill me and tell the authorities you were protecting yourself from a homicidal maniac."
"I'm glad you're aware of your disadvantages."
"But you're not aware of yours."
"A gun."
"Did you murder my father?"
"What are you going to do?
Did you kill me?"
"Who? Who's speaking?"
"Answer me. Did you murder me?"
"Who are you? What are you?"
"Answer me."
"If I'll answer you, I'll kill you."
"Don't." "Speak before you die. Did you murder me in my sleep? I have got to know now."
"Murder you?
Did you? Did you?"
But he never spoke again. My father, using my body, had murdered him.
"Howard, have you seen Dale?"
"Yes, Mother."
"Where is he?"
"Come in. He's in here."
"Howard, you murdered him?"
"Yes, when he tried to throw that knife at me. You see, he still has it in his hand."
"Howard!"
"Don't try to get away."
"Let me out of here."
"No, Mother."
"And don't call me Mother. You're no son of mine. You're a murderer."
"Yes, Mother, but less of a murderer than you are. At least I killed in self-defense. Not when my victim was asleep, helpless, and unaware of danger."
"Let me out of here."
"No, you're going to stay." "Oh." "Yes, this gun. The same gun I used to murder your husband."
"Oh.
Stay just where you are."
"Why?"
"Because I want you to see this man who succeeded my father. This creature whom you love. Look at him there, Mother. Twisted grotesquely into the whining coward he proved himself to be in death. Look at him. This
This is the man you gave up my father for! This is the man you committed murder for!
Let me go.
Now, look! This is the man who used his last breath to betray you!
Betray me?
Yeah!
How?
He said that you killed my father!
I?
Yes!
It's a lie!
Is it, Zilda?
William.
Is it?
Yes, I didn't murder you.
I mean to know the truth. Do not think this is some trick played by my son. I am William. I know things which only you and I in all the world know.
Stop.
Tell me the truth.
Don't point that gun at me.
Your only chance is to tell me the truth.
William, will you let me live?
It will depend on what you tell me.
And why should I tell you?
Because I am your husband, who once loved and trusted you, Zilda. Tell me! Tell me now, or you will die.
Very well. I did it. I committed the murder. That's what you wanted to hear, isn't it? That's what you wanted me to tell you, isn't it?
Is what I wanted to know.
What are you going to do?
What do you think I should do?
Let me live. I've loved you. I've always loved you. It wasn't my fault. He put me up to it. Now that he's dead, I realize what I've done.
Do you?
Yes. Let me live. Let me live.
Perhaps I shall, Mother.
Howard. Oh, you understand, don't you? It's just as it happened with you and your father. So it happened with Dale and myself. You won't do anything to me, will you? I'm not your real mother, I know, but I have loved you, Howard. You know I've loved you. And I still love you.
Tell me one thing. Was he as guilty as you?
Yes. Yes, it was really all his fault.
Then come with me, Zilda. We're going to the police. And that's what happened, Inspector. She finally confessed. And I brought her here.
Have you anything to say, ma'am?
Yes, Inspector.
Well?
Everything I told my stepson, every word of my confession, was a lie.
Mother!
This boy's insane. He's been out of his mind ever since his father was murdered. I only made that confession to humor him and save my life. And I can prove what I say. More than one doctor has found him unbalanced.
I believe you, ma'am.
Inspector, you can't. This woman murdered my father. She told
me. We know who murdered your father, son. It was not this woman. He picked up a man yesterday. He confessed. He gave us all the details. They all checked with the evidence. His name is Ralph Stone. Criminal with a long record. And he murdered your father for money.
Then it wasn't my mother.
No, it wasn't your stepmother, no. It was her husband, Dale Burton. We learned that he hired this Ralph Stone to commit the murder.
Then I was right. My father knew what he was doing when he made me pull that trigger.
I wonder, son. Because you're under arrest for murder.
I kept telling them that I didn't murder Dale Barton. I didn't pull that trigger. It was my father who murdered him. They don't believe me. But it has to be right, you see. How could Father have known Dale was guilty without supernatural knowledge? My father still lives inside of me. And sometimes he talks.
Well, friend, there's nothing wrong with little old Howard. Just a little bit nuts, but who isn't? And how'd you like someone to possess you someday? Just think, you could lead a double life for the price of a single. In fact, you may be able to save money because, as everybody knows, two can live cheaper than one. Which brings us to the moral of tonight's story, taken from the croonings of Nature Girl, who warbles, "Don't drop dead except in bed, otherwise..." otherwise you can break your head. It's common knowledge, I suppose, that jittery nerves can help to cause a miserable headache. And it's almost as well known, I think, that Bromo Seltzer can help a headache in short order, even when that headache is accompanied by jangled nerves or stomach upset. Because Bromo Seltzer not only helps the headache, but helps calm the jumpy nerves and stomach upset at the same time. The makers of Bromo Seltzer have just received a letter from Mrs. Helen A. Haas of Mount Vernon, New York, in which she said,
I've used Bromo Seltzer many times. As director of a children's dramatic school, many times jumpy nerves bring on a headache. But thanks to your fine product, a headache no longer creates a problem.
Thank you, Mrs. Helen Haas. You pointed out once again what millions of smart men and women know. Bromo Seltzer fights a headache quickly and helps calm jumpy nerves, too. What's more, it's so pleasant tasting, it's actually refreshing. Caution, use only as directed. If headaches persist or recur, see your doctor. But for ordinary headaches...
Fight headache three ways!
Well, it's time to close that squeaking door for another 7-day rest. Until next week at this time, when Bromo Seltzer brings you another Inner Sanctum Mystery, directed by Hyman Brown. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 5th of July, 1948 on CBS. That same story would be heard again less than a year later, performed live on February 7th, 1949. This is an hour of horror from radio's golden age on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Now time for Murder at Midnight with a story called The Ace of Death from August 9th, 1946.
Your card, Mr. Thompson.
The King of Hearts.
Colonel Moore.
The Five of Clubs, Mr. President.
Count Rizzini. Come, Count, we are waiting. What is your card?
L'asso di spada.
I beg your pardon.
The Ace of Death.
Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The Ace of Death.
I stood there on the bridge and stared down into the swirling fog. It hid the river like a white shroud. I shivered. It'd be cold down there, freezing cold. I would go down, down, deep into the black, watery depths, my ears bursting and my lungs fighting for breath. And then, finally, there would be silence. Silence. And eternal peace. Somewhere a clock began to chime 11. The last hour of a man's life. My life. I, John Evans, ill and broke without family or friends, sick and weary of the constant struggle among earthbound mortals, looked forward to my new future, death. I put one foot over the bridge rail. My heart pounded. My head throbbed, and then someone came out of the mist and seized me from behind.
No, you fool! Don't do it, not this way!
Let me go! Let me go while I still got the courage!
Did you hear what I've got to say?
Why did you stop me? Why? I wanted to die. I wanted to!
I sympathize with you, young man.
You see, I too am tired of life and seek death.
You want to die?
Yes, but not by drowning. No, my boy, I've made other arrangements. The river is not only a dull way to die, it's positively sordid. The very idea makes me shudder with distaste.
Wait, I don't understand.
Well, it's very simple, young man. No, most of us are too commonplace about the hereafter. We enter it with morbid fear and without imagination. Actually, death can be glorious.
Glorious?
Yes, a great new change from our ordinary lifetime routine. A journey into an uncharted world. A man should meet death on the wings of adventure. It should be an exciting and delightful experience.
Death? Exciting and delightful?
Why not? I've already arranged my decease along these lines. And since you and I have an interest in common, why not join me?
Huh?
We'll seek death's private door together. Come, young man. Come along with me.
Where?
To my club. I'll be glad to recommend you for membership.
Your club?
Yes. It caters to a clientele of gentlemen like ourselves. We call it the Hereafter Club.
The whole thing was mad, insane. And yet it was intriguing, too. I looked hard at the elderly gentleman who'd come out of the fog to pull me from the brink of death, only to offer me a pleasanter and more delightful variety later. He repeated his invitation to join him, and I could see that he was perfectly sincere. I decided to go with him, even though I secretly considered him some kind of a madman. After all, what could I lose now? We took a cab and stopped at a grim-looking building in the silk stocking district on the east side. My elderly friend, whom I now knew as Frederick Whitney, took me into a luxurious reception room and asked me to wait there until he saw the president of the club. Finally, the president himself came out to greet me. He was a man of about 50 with a bald spot on his head, piercing gray eyes and a thin mouth. He smiled and extended his hand to me.
Welcome to the Hereafter Club, Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Whitney has recommended you very highly, and I'm delighted to count you among our members.
I am pretty vague as to what all this is about, but Mr. Whitney mentioned something about a $400 initiation fee, and, well, I'm
Tut, my boy. Mr. Whitney knew you were in delicate financial straits and took your initiation fee upon himself.
Oh.
You were fortunate indeed, Mr. Evans, that he happened along and rescued you from the river. Such a morbid way of entering the hereafter would have been tragic indeed.
Isn't death in any form tragic?
By no means, Mr. Evans. Death can be a triumph, a fine, heady wine, when so designed by a connoisseur. Come, Mr. Evans, follow me. You are about to embark on an exciting and unforgettable experience.
Like a man in a dream, I followed the president into a large room. There was a green baize table in the center of it, and several men in evening dress lounged around the room drinking champagne. They seemed nervous and distraught. And when they laughed, it was high-pitched and too loud. They seemed to be waiting for something to happen, some event to begin. As the president and I stood at the door, he turned to me and smiled.
These men, Mr. Evans, are charter members of the Hereafter Club. They come from all walks of life, but they have one common desire, death.
I see. And what happens now?
Our procedure is very simple. We all play a game of cards.
A game of cards?
A simple but fascinating game of cards. That is, these gentlemen play. As president of the Hereafter Club, I am the dealer.
And what is the game?
Each man draws a card and turns it face up. The man who is fortunate enough to draw the ace of spades dies. For this is the card of death.
And how does he die?
By the hand of the man who draws the ace of clubs.
Oh, I see. The ace of clubs eliminates the ace of spades.
Precisely.
How many of these games do you play a night?
Just one. But as you can see, Mr. Evans, during its course, a man can live a lifetime of adventure. For this makes of death an exciting game of chance, a game to whip the blood and make the pulses race. You see, one never knows whether he will draw the fatal ace of spades tonight or whether he will survive for weeks or even months.
A question, Mr. President.
Yes?
How much of this can a man stand?
I can only answer in this way, Mr. Evans. Our members always come back to the Hereafter Club night after night until they draw the ace of spades. Once a devotee of the game, it's impossible to resist. Now, but come, we're ready to begin.
In a kind of hypnotic trance, I followed the president into the room. But when the members saw him, their conversation stopped suddenly. They put down their champagne glasses, straightened. Their faces grew pale and tense, their eyes brilliant with a mixture of fear and anticipation. The president took a fresh pack of cards from his pocket, and like a magnet attracting iron filings, the men drew close to the baize-covered table. I found myself standing next to Frederick Whitney as the president spoke.
Gentlemen of the Hereafter Club, the game is about to begin. Someone here tonight will draw the ace of spades. Whoever he is, let me assure him that we will arrange his death so that it will appear to be an accident with no breath of scandal and with no unnecessary anguish to his family. We all know that life is only a stage to play the fool upon, as long as the part amuses us. Now we have wearied of our daily performance and have chosen a civilized and exciting way to quit that stage. Gentlemen, the deal.
It was a fantastic, weird, monstrous experience. The green baize table, the president puffing on his cigar and dealing a card to each man face down, each man his face like a graven image turning his card up. I could feel the sweat pouring down my forehead. My heart pounded like a hammer, and next to me, Frederick Whitney stood rigid, his eyes shining as the president's voice droned on.
Mr. Thompson, your card.
They're here. The three of diamonds.
Colonel Moore.
The six of hearts.
Mr. Denison.
It's the jack of spades.
Count Rizzini.
The eight of clubs.
Mr. Evans, our new member.
The queen of hearts.
Mr. Whitney. Mr. Whitney, what is your card?
The ace of clubs.
Well, Mr. Whitney, congratulations. You shall be the official agent for tonight. Now let us see whom you will guide into the hereafter.
Frederick Whitney left the game and went directly into the president's private office. There was only one card to be drawn now, the ace of death. The tension was almost unbearable. I felt like running away from that table, screaming at the top of my voice, but I didn't. I only stood there, riveted, staring at those cards, listening to the president's hypnotic voice.
Mr. Benedict.
The tray of spades.
Mr. Wallace.
Nine of diamonds.
Mr. Thompson.
The king of hearts.
Colonel Moore, your card.
The five of clubs.
Count Rizzini. Count Rizzini, we are waiting. What is your card?
L'asso di spada.
I beg your pardon.
The ace of death.
I stumbled from that horrible place into the cold night air. I went directly to my room, shaken to the core at what I had seen. In the cold, gray light of the morning, it took on the aspect of a bad dream, a macabre nightmare. I resolved to shrug it off, forget the whole thing. But when I bought a newspaper, the headline struck me like the blow of a hammer. Quickly, my heart beating wildly, I read the lead paragraph. Count Pietro Rizzini, prominent Italian nobleman, was hit and instantly killed at midnight when he stepped off the curb into the path of a speeding taxicab. The Count, who had recently lost his fortune, was with a friend, Mr. Frederick Whitney, when the unfortunate accident occurred.
And so, in the darkness of the night, a man who has played a grim game and lost goes to his death as the clock strikes 12 for...
Murder at midnight.
Now, here is John Evans again to continue his story.
Yes, the Hereafter Club was really a murder club. A racket conceived and created by the polished gentleman who called himself the president. He made a game of death and grew rich on it. For each night, although he lost a member, he made $400, the member's initiation fee. And as the members dropped out, according to Hoyle, there were always plenty of disillusioned neophytes like myself ready to replace them. My first impulse after reading that grisly newspaper announcement was to run to the police. But I had pledged my word to secrecy. And besides, I wanted to go back. I had to go back. The thrill of the game was in my blood. I fought to resist it, but it was like a hypnotic drug. Time after time, I went back to the green baize table, and then, one night...
Your card, Mr. Whitney? Come, sir, what is your card?
The ace of spades.
Now, my friend, Frederick Whitney, the man who'd introduced me into the Hereafter Club, had drawn the ace of death. His string had run out. He was through. I stared at him. He was calm. And there was a half smile on his face. He seemed almost glad that for him the game was over. The president kept on dealing.
Mr. Thompson, your card?
The Jack of Hearts.
Colonel Moore?
The Four of Spades.
Mr. Denison?
The Ace of Diamonds.
Mr. Benedict?
Ten of Clubs.
Mr. Evans?
They were waiting for me.
Come, Mr. Evans. Your card?
The Ace of Clubs.
Congratulations, Mr. Evans. Only your sixth evening at our club, and you draw a winning card. Now, if you'll join Mr. Whitney and myself in my private office, we'll arrange the details.
The instructions were simple. I was to drive Mr. Whitney into the garage of his home, leave him in the car with the motor running. That was all. And so without a word, I got behind the wheel and drove my elderly benefactor to the appointed place. We looked at each other there in the garage, and then he said...
John, if anyone had to draw the ace of clubs, I'm glad it was you.
No, Mr. Whitney, look here. I don't want to kill you. You know I don't. Let's end this farce. Let's go to the police and end this monstrous thing.
No, John. You forget I'm a murderer. I have already killed. And I'd rather die by carbon monoxide gas in this comparatively painless way than in the electric chair.
But the police will never know that you were responsible for Rizzini's death.
If we expose the Hereafter Club, the president would be sure to tell them.
There must be a way, somehow.
No, my boy. I have chosen death. My time has come. In a way, I'm glad. Everything is resolved. There is no more waiting. Waiting for the fatal card. No, it's over now. Go, my boy. Leave the garage. Slam the door.
No, Mr. Whitney. For God's sake, turn off the motor before...
Go, John, before it's too late. Hurry. Don't worry about me. I have sought death for weeks. Now I welcome it. Meet it gladly.
I staggered to the garage door, went out, and slammed it shut. I heard the motor still going. 5 minutes. 10 minutes. I knew that it was the end now for Frederick Whitney. I looked at my luminescent watch. It was just midnight. I walked the streets for hours after that. Now I was a murderer. True, I had killed with my victim's consent, but I had killed. Now, as the dawn came, I began to shake with a cold rage against the connoisseur of death who called himself the president. Men killed. Men died, and he profited without risk. He always dealt the game and never participated. He was a prince of ruin. And unfortunate men like myself could not resist what he had to offer. And so, like a smiling Satan in formal clothes, exerting a demoniac spell upon the fools who played his game, he watched them destroy each other. That night, I went to the Hereafter Club, and just before the game, confronted him.
Ah, good evening, Mr. Evans. I see you are back again tonight.
Yes, Mr. President, I'm back again. And I want to congratulate you.
Indeed? On what?
On your financial vision in starting this club. By simple mathematics, it nets you a handsome profit. We play 5 evenings a week, and each evening you make $400. That, Mr. President, adds up to $2,000 a week.
Yes, it's a tidy sum, Mr. Evans, to be sure. But to tell you the truth, tonight we play our last game.
Our last game?
Yes, to be frank with you, Mr. Evans, the sport of the game is beginning to pall on me. I've decided to retire to the country and pursue the delights of horticulture. Flowers are my hobby, you know.
Oh, I see. Even you can tire of sending men to their deaths.
And just what do you mean by that, Mr. Evans?
I mean that you are a coward, Mr. President. You have created a monstrous game, and yet you haven't the courage to play it yourself.
You question my courage then, Mr. Evans?
I do, and I question your honor, too. It seems to me that if you profit by your clients, you should take the same risk they do.
You are a very impertinent young man, but I cannot let your accusations go without rebuttal. Indeed, it might be an interesting experience to play this last game myself. A kind of fitting climax to a successful career. Of course, Mr. Evans, I'll demand a handsome apology when it's over.
You don't mean that you are actually going to take a chance?
Yes, why not? I've often been intrigued by the excitement of my clients. Now, I might as well savor that excitement myself. Before I close the Hereafter Club.
The news that the president was going to play created a sensation among the members. He dealt a round, and then another, and the third time around, for the second night in a row, I drew the murder card, the ace of clubs. The president smiled his congratulations at what he called my phenomenal luck and continued.
Mr. Thompson, your card?
Two spades.
Colonel Moore?
The King of Hearts.
Mr. Dennison?
The Seven of Clubs.
Mr. Benedict?
Queen of Diamonds.
And now, gentlemen, I'll turn over my own card.
Congratulations, Mr. President. You have drawn the Ace of Spades. The president's face was immobile. Not an eyelash flickered. We went into his private office, and his words were calm as he explained the evening's arrangements. I had drawn the murder card, and he had drawn the death card. Yet, judging by his unworried attitude and serene bearing, it might have been the other way around. I couldn't help a flicker of admiration for him. As for me, I was eager to do my part, to kill this man who had been caught at the last moment in his own net. He had sent many a man to his death. And now he had to meet it himself.
There is a railroad bridge on the outskirts of town, Mr. Evans. It has a low railing, and below it an express train passes exactly at midnight. You will push me over that rail into the path of the locomotive. And now, if you're ready, let us go.
We didn't speak on the trip out to the bridge. It was a cold night. We stood there, shivering and waiting. Finally, in the distance, that was it. The midnight train. I could see its bright headlight flickering as it approached. Then the president spoke.
Mr. Evans, of course we are not going through with this.
Of course we are, Mr. President.
Look here, my dear boy. As you know, the Hereafter Club is disbanded. Unlike my clients, I have no desire to die. There's no point in doing so.
Well, you are going to die, Mr. President, just as you have sent others. I'll see to it myself.
Be reasonable, Mr. Evans. I have everything to live for.
And so can you have. Now then, I'm a very wealthy man, and I'm quite sure you could use, say, $10,000.
Get close to that rail, Mr. President.
I suggest you listen to reason, Mr. Evans.
The others died without a whimper. You sent them into the hereafter, and now you're going yourself as you deserve.
You're a very stubborn young man, Mr. Evans.
No, drop that gun. Don't.
Try to kill me, will you?
Don't.
Well, you got me in the arm, that's all. And now you're going over that rail.
Don't. I'll give you anything. Anything.
Over you.
No.
When the train had passed, I saw what was left of his body on the tracks. Slowly, with dragging footsteps, I walked down the street toward the twin green lights of the police station. Now, like the others, I'm ready for the end.
The doors of the police station open and close on the man who trumped the ace of death. The man who now seeks his own dark destiny as the clocks strike 12 for
murder at midnight.
Murder at Midnight, on Tuned to Yesterday, from August 9th, 1946, a syndicated broadcast. Wrapping up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.